Robert, I want to jump right in. We just spent some time talking about Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, and this year could be a historic year for the future of the Supreme Court. Last week, we saw a couple of big rulings. One barred child rapists from facing the death penalty. The other struck down a ban on handguns in Washington, D.C. And a lot of these, both of those rulings and some other ones, were a 5-4 vote, which means that the 9 justices were really split. What's the significance of a 5-4 vote, and what does it say about the composition of the court, Robert?
It suggests, you know, that the court is, of course, is pretty divided. You've got Anthony Kennedy, who is now sort of taken over the role that Sandra Day O'Connor had previously, much to the frustration, actually, of many conservatives, because they feel that he is too, from their perspective, is too squishy on issues such as rights of suspected terrorists and Guantanamo and so forth. But what is significant, particularly significant, obviously, if you're on the other side of the divide, is that the liberal court, the liberal members, have some of the most oldest or some of those who are in frail health. Justice Stevens is apparently still in very good health. There have been talk, though, about Ruth Bader Ginsburg not being in the best of health. And so if John McCain becomes president, he would be able to replace those two with more conservative justices. Obviously, if Barack Obama wins, he would be able to he would keep the balance, the 5-4 conservative to liberal balance, basically the status quo.
Mary, you know, some groups, particularly, for example, I think of abortion rights groups, emphasize the Supreme Court as one of those election year issues that you should pay attention to. But how much do people in general really pay attention to the fact that the president appoints the justices?
Well, it's not clear to me, because I know several times during political campaigns for the president, I've tried to go around talking to people about the courts and how important they are. And most of the time, they just don't get it. And it doesn't seem as salient an issue as some of the other things that that we talk about, but it is. It's also the case that, and bottom line is, you can't tell who any particular president might nominate. And during the campaigns, for example, Mr. Obama stated about a year ago when Roberts was up, for his confirmation, the Washington Post reported that he was about to vote in favor of him, not seeing any reason not to, until his chief of staff, a guy named Pete Rouse, told him it wouldn't look good if he were campaigning for president if he voted for him. And he didn't. But so you never can tell what kind of person. It's risky. So I think most people, if they really sit down and think about it, they think it's a risk. And it's not always, but you can't force people to nominate the, and you can work on the Senate. But for the most part, most people don't pay that much attention. No matter how you push with the public and say you better pay attention, a lot of them don't pay any attention to it.
I think part of the problem is frankly that sometimes when the activists do get energized about the Supreme Court, most of the media tends to focus on, say, the abortion issue, when there are a whole host of issues that are going to impact people in many, many ways, and abortion is often the most minor of them.
Yes, and the other point to make, to segue from the death penalty and Thurgood Marshall, that death penalty case the other day, Marshall and the LDF brought all kinds of death penalty cases, because the history is that it's been used in a discriminatory manner against black folks who have been convicted, who have been put to death. And then with DNA, we found a lot of times that people didn't even do whatever it was, and it was suspect in the first place. So you have to be careful with it. And I think death penalty cases are important as abortion cases. They're both about death,
which makes Barack Obama's actual criticism of that particular decision rather interesting, in terms of him seeming to kind of balance himself into a slightly more pro-death penalty viewpoint on that particular issue.
Well, what that's about, Robert, is that we are in general election season. We're in what we call the pander period, in which candidates on both sides, whoever they are, during the general election, you always move to the center and you always disavow whatever you did or before, and you try to cater to people who are there. So I think that that's what accounts for it.
Though he did actually write even in the Audacity of Hope book that he did favor the death penalty in limited circumstances, including child rape. So that's not completely reasoned.
Yeah. Well, we're getting ready to go to a break, but Robert, just for a quick second, do you think that evangelical Christians are getting what they want from McCain in terms of assurances about the Supreme Court?
I think conservatives in general are. He criticized both the Guantanamo's decision, and he also criticized the child rape death penalty decision as well. And he's been very, very quick on that. So he seems to be saying the right things. I think he may have issues with evangelicals, but his possible court picks, I don't think, are one of them.
The faith-based initiative Obama announced may help him with the evangelicals, but for those who the bottom line is abortion and the right to just simply hire people of their own faith, it may not go far enough. But with a number of them, that initiative may help.
I think that's
all right,
actually.
Guys. Okay. You know, it's break time. Okay. I love this. I don't have to do anything. You guys just roll with it, and I love that. So, Mary and Robert, stick with us through our break. We will be back with more political news in just a minute. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We are back with Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, and Robert George, an editorial writer for the New York Post. So, guys, let's turn to a hot topic on the campaign trail, patriotism.
I will never question the patriotism of others in this campaign. And I will not stand idly by when I hear others question mine.
I certainly honor his service as a prisoner of war. He was a hero to me and to hundreds of thousands, millions of others in the armed forces as a prisoner of war. But he hasn't held executive responsibility. That large squadron in the Navy that he commanded, it wasn't a wartime squadron. He hasn't been there and ordered the bombs to fall.
I have to say, Barack Obama has not had any of those experiences either, nor has he ridden in a fighter plane and gotten shot down.
Well, I don't think riding in a fighter plane and getting shot down is a qualification to be president.
Really?
All right, guys, that was a lot of information. That first clip was from Barack Obama. Then we moved on to General Wesley Clark talking to journalist Bob Schieffer. And the whole scope of that was really about patriotism, what Barack Obama said about his patriotism, and then General Clark getting into a bit of hot water for seeming to criticize John McCain's credentials. What do you think of the move by Wesley Clark, Robert?
Well, you know, I think it's one example of why, you know, the Wesley Clark for President boomlet of 2004 didn't go too far. He, you know, is somebody who likes to sort of kind of talk kind of off the cuff. And, you know, he is, as some people have said, actually about John McCain, he is his own man. I think it is kind of clear that the Obama campaign wants to try and de-link the connection between McCain as being, you know, a legitimate war hero and so forth, and the idea that that should necessarily make him a major qualification for actually ascending the presidency. However, the way Clark went about it was incredibly crude and kind of stumbling, and I think it blew up in the Obama campaign's face. To their credit, I guess, to their tactical credit, they managed to extricate themselves from it a little bit and turn it into Obama's slamming MoveOn.org for the Petraeus stuff. But I think it took them off message for about a half a day or so.
And Mary, finally.
Well, but let me just say that all those clips and the Clark thing, Obama was talking about patriotism, which means he thinks he needs to talk about his patriotism, which mm-hmm. means that their numbers show them that this is a problem for him. That's why he was talking about it. And if he continues to talk about it, it means that the numbers are showing them that it is a problem. As far as Wes Clark is concerned, Wes Clark is his own man. I know him. And I was curious to me when I saw him show up on TV, why did he get on there? Did the campaign send him, you know, when they were asked for a military guy? Because he's known for speaking his mind. I agree that when he said what he said about McCain, which is actually true, all he was doing was making people think about what they could say about Obama, who didn't have any military experience. So it was inept and artful, what he did. But I did notice that the Obama hasn't asked him to apologize to McCain. Nobody said apologize. And on the liberal blogs, which at this state in the general election don't count for as much, he's like a hero because he said this, which shows you how these things go. But what was key for me was that Obama really feels that the numbers show that somehow he's got to get this monkey off his back about the patriotism issue.
All right, well, guys, we have to wrap it up. You know, we could talk all day because you guys have the information. Aww. But I want to thank you for another fine installment of the Robert and Mary Show.
And it's always a pleasure. And by the way, I also like to extend my wishes and observations for the 100th anniversary of Thurgood Marshall's birth. He was an absolutely fantastic historic figure, as Mary said, and he would have been a giant whether he'd made it to the Supreme Court or not. So
absolutely.
Thanks, Robert. Well, Robert George is an editorial writer for the New York Post. He joined us from our NPR studios in New York. And Mary Frances Berry is a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. She spoke with us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C.